we want leaders to make respect as important as results. Leaders only know results. It's all they've ever been measured by. Even younger leaders have been mentored by their predecessors who only care about results. Obviously, results are important. We don't have a business if we don't generate results. But by raising the bar on the respect level, now we're in an environment where people do feel validated. They do feel trusted. They know their work matters. And now, because we've increased respect, we've increased results.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process. Welcome. I am so excited to introduce you to today's guests. Yes, that's right. I said it with an S at the end, plural. We have two individuals with us, not just one person, and they are both friends of mine. Just in full disclosure, I have known Chris and Mark for many years in the leadership space, and we met online originally and then finally got to meet in person, and now love their work, so aligned and just so excited to have them on the show. So let me tell you who we're talking about here. We've got Chris Edmonds and Mark Babbitt, both of whom have been named top 100 leadership speakers by Inc. magazine. And they have spent their careers helping organizations improve their workplace cultures, earning the respect of some of the top people in their field and beyond, including Venus Williams, that's right, the tennis extraordinaire, and who has a number of other business interests, who's not just written their books forward, but is also a client. So it is my privilege to welcome the authors of Good Comes First, How Today's Leaders Create an Uncompromising Company Culture That Doesn't Suck. Chris and Mark, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
David, you're hired. You can do intros for us for the rest of our lives.
That's just what I was thinking. I'm just going to just do voiceover work for every other podcast out there. Well done.
Oh, you just want that for, you just deliver that standard for any other interviews you do, huh?
Oh, trust me, not necessarily, sure. But it's fine. But I have to brag, our publisher marketing team just sent us both 16 by 20 covers framed. And so Mark and I had to put them over our shoulders. So
I'm loving them. And if
that's, you know, the theme,
we'll have to get some of this in video clips or something so everybody can see them. But yeah, love this. So why good comes first, and we're going to dive in and talk all about this. But before we can go there, I've got to ask you both. And so Chris, I'm going to call on you first. So Mark, you're going to get an extra second to come up with your answer. But Chris, if you would, what is your earliest memory of yourself as a leader?
Wow. I was given leadership responsibility when I was 17 years old, YMCA in my hometown that I'd grown up in. I was a brat, you know, in every program, in the pool every night, all that fun stuff in Southern California. And I was given a charge of, I started working the front desk. You know, way back when, before it was really well understood. I'm old, so this was a long time ago, but it was like, yeah, here's what you're going to do. You have to check out keys. You have to take money, da, 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 and you're going to schedule people. So my actual first responsibility wasn't as much managing people, which is probably good, but it was just plugging people into the hours they wanted. And of course I took flack for that. But what I began to do, and it's interesting because my experience as a leader was, as I began to realize, you know, somebody may come to me and need something and I have no idea what I'm doing. So let me watch. Let me see what others are doing. And in that very building, over the course of a year, I found really good leaders and not so good leaders. And so that observer, I guess, was you know, turned on and hasn't been turned off since. I'm always watching other leaders and trying to learn from them.
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic. So I've never heard that answer before, that your earliest leadership memory is of watching other leaders and learning from them.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Cool. All right, Mark, over to you.
Well, I hope I don't take 7 minutes to answer this one question, but it's a bit lengthy. So I was that kid. I was always the loudest guy on the football team and the baseball team, and people tended to rally around me. So I came to the, I don't know what I thought of as leadership back then, naturally. And then I went in the military and was immediately made a squad leader and a student leader in technical school and throughout the military experience. But my first professional leadership experience, what sticks out most in my brain, was very shortly after the Loma Prieta earthquake in the Bay Area, wow, California. Mm. And all the managers were standing around going, well, we have millions of dollars of test systems out among all of our semiconductor clients here in Silicon Valley, and there's no phones and there's no power, and we don't know if people are okay or not. And so they're all trying to figure out what to do. And I remember just walking in the room as a very young engineer and saying, this is BS. I'll clean it up. This is BS. We all have company cars. Get in your damn cars. You've been sitting around for hours trying to decide what to do. Get in your car. And so we all jumped in our cars and we all visited our clients for the next 3 days, one at a time, hundreds of clients, sales and engineering working together. And we ended up getting noticed by the San Jose Mercury News and some other press outlets for that customer service focused effort. And it wasn't until, I don't know, a few weeks later, somebody came up and said, that's leadership. Hmm. Like you just owned it. And I went, wow, I guess it was. So that's my long answer.
And it didn't even take 7 minutes. And if I'm consolidating all of that, Mark, it was recognizing that bias to action, that we are going to do something. Yeah. Let's stop standing around.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah, all right. So we've got watching other leaders, learning from them, and taking action. Two things that you have continued to do your entire leadership career. I find it just, I love asking people that question, because some of those earliest leadership memories are things that tend to be imprints that we carry through in all of our leadership work. And they definitely come through in your book, In Good Comes First, and even in the earliest pages. So I want to highlight here, when you're talking about Good Comes First, in the early pages, you tell the reader and you tell all of us, look, we didn't write this book to teach you, let me quote here, we're not here to tell you why you need to build a good culture or even teach you how to build an uncompromising culture. It's about doing it.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about there? When you talk about it's about doing it, how is that different from the why and the how?
I think one of the key ideas Mark and I had when we began working together on a book, and it was 3 years ago, and it's evolved quite a bit based upon the pandemic and business needs and leadership examples, right? Great ones and not so great ones. But we wanted to make sure that we weren't going to be writing a book that would be put on a shelf, that might be dusted off periodically, saying, oh, there were a couple of cool stories in that book. And both of us have had that bias for action, that if we don't help leaders actually make change, and yes, we can help and we can coach and we can guide and we can pop in every 3 months, right? But we're not the ones that are in charge of the operation. We have to be able to pass on not just the belief that this is a good thing to do for their communities and their players and the players' families, but those are the young leaders that are gonna come up and watch you all, how you manage this business and how you've put values on the wall. You've had behaviors on the wall. Now, are you just going to ignore them, which is unselfishly, it's something that we've seen once or twice, and David, you have too. So I think what we wanted to do was to be able to say, we're going to teach you how to do this. We've had enough experiences. Some of it early on was more stumbling than intentional. I've got this brilliant process I think we should try. It was trial and error. But we really feel as though at this stage, every business can improve the quality of the work culture and the relationship of people in that culture. And they have to start now.
Both of you have been doing work with organizations, large organizations, well-known organizations, smaller groups that maybe we don't know the names of, but who are doing the work. And you're choosing to write about this. You're choosing to give leaders something that we obviously at Lesker Leaders love, which is practicality. And we'll get into some of those practical elements here. Yeah. I'm curious, and I always am as an author, and you know, I got to decide, when am I going to write this next book? Why am I going to write this? What is it in the world that isn't there that says this needs to come into existence? I'm curious for you, and Mark, I'll have you start us off on this one. Why? Why good comes first? What motivated you to get this out here?
Well, I'll tell you, for me personally, having been in the career world for a lot of years, career development world specifically, in HR, I grew tired of sending college students, recent graduates, young professionals out into the workforce that was less than satisfying. People thought they were getting their dream jobs at some very well-known companies just to be completely dissatisfied. And on top of that, there was a realization, and this is why I love working with and loved writing the book with Chris, is we both realized that in many, many cases, and Dave, you and Karen already know this, it's not a culture issue, it's a leadership issue. And nobody was starting those conversations. No, nobody was saying, leader, you are the person responsible for creating an uncompromising, positive, purposeful, productive culture. It's your job. And when we put those two things together in our lunch conversations, we finally figured out that we had something to say. And you know, you said, I don't, you know, when are we going to write our next book? I swore after the first book, I would never write another book. It was probably good for our business, but it wasn't a great experience. So
as an author, Mark, I have to laugh. How many times do we say that?
Yeah.
So, and here we are, right? So here's the main thing. When Chris and I sat down, and I remember pounding my fist on the arm of a chair in a Hilton in south of Denver, Colorado, and saying, this can't be a book based on theory. It has to be tactical and practical. And I don't want our readers to be that guy who leaves like a Tony Robbins seminar or a speech by the esteemed Mr. Robbins and walk out the emergency exit and go, damn, I feel good. I'm just so inspired. I don't have a clue what to do next. But boy, I feel good. And I didn't want good comes first to be that. And neither did Chris. So that's the inspiration behind the tactical and practical nature of the book is we don't want to just tell people, well, as Chris has already said, why it's important or why it matters to your employees. We actually wanted to walk people through the entire process that we use in our practices.
Love that passion. And I think that's important to note that you are using this process and,
absolutely.
And Venus she talks about the process that she's gone through and the application of these things to more than one of her businesses. So, you know, and listeners of this show are all about practicality. That's why they're here. So that's why I'm excited to have you here to share this with them. And before we get into those practical elements, though, we've got to define what are we talking about here? Because we know we're not talking about just feeling good. So when we say good comes first, an uncompromising culture, what are we talking about? Let's define terms.
Good. Let me jump in first, and I'd love to hear Mark's perceptions of it as well. What's very interesting about this simple idea, three words, good comes first. And I'll tell you, you know that as some of our writing colleagues saw us kind of presenting the initial drafts of these things, they said, oh, what a great title. Well, okay, but there's not a lot of depth to it, right? So what do we mean by good comes first? And the challenge is that every company has to figure that out. They have to figure it out and understand that the way their employees, their team members, their associates experience other players, their peers, their bosses, systems, stupid policy, on, much less how easy is it to actually deliver a product or service to a customer. Those things, there's a million things that can go wrong and make that employee feel not trusted, not validated. So our definition is employees of all sizes, shapes, colors, genders, preferences, et cetera, nationalities need to, in every interaction, notice it's starting to get harder now. We're moving from good to holy crap. Every interaction needs to be respectful and validating of their ideas, efforts, and contributions. Now, that is not describing every workplace. That's a very high standard. And so yes, we want to present the idea that number one, this is possible. And number two, and Mark, you use this language, and it is really something that I've embraced, that leaders have to co-create what good is, because every employee population is going to be slightly different. Team members can be of one generation or another, and even those generations want different things. They may want flexibility, or they may want, you know, Fridays off, or what, you know, right? One's a baseball coach and Thursday is at two. She's got to be at the, you know, on the field. So what we hope is, over the course of the book, yes, we set up a maybe low-lying fruit kind of thing, but this is hard. And this takes discipline and structure.
All right. So I want to capture what you just said. And then Mark, I'm going to go over for you. So Chris, you said every employee, every person in the organization, in every interaction. Okay. So right now we've already created a very high bar. Okay. Every person, every time, in every interaction, experiences, and give us, you had three things that they experienced. What were those again?
They are trusted, respected, validated for their ideas, efforts, and contributions.
And so as I'm reflecting on that as a leader who believes in human-centered leadership, who teaches it every day, I'm like, holy cow, I don't always rise to that bar. Like, wow, I'm in progress on that too.
Absolutely. Well,
we all are, David, even the authors of this book. We all have our stressors. We all have our triggers. We all have our pressures, right? And it's hard to stay in the moment, right? And there's this whole movement around mindfulness, and that plays such a big role, but that's not what we're talking about here. Mm-mm. Because we know we're not all perfect, right? So sometimes, and I'll tell you, our foundational principle throughout the book and also throughout our practice is that we want leaders to make respect as important as results. And leaders only know results. It's all they've ever been measured by. Even younger leaders have been mentored by their predecessors who only care about results. The business professors only talked about results, right? And so now to ask them to say, well, look, obviously results are important. We don't have a business if we don't generate results. But by raising the bar on the respect level, now we're in an environment where people do feel validated. They do feel trusted. They know their work matters. And now, because we've increased respect, we've increased results. And we've collected data to show, and some of our clients have given us testimonials to say, Mike, in 6 months after starting this, my customer service ratings went up 35% because people were genuinely happier to be here working. And so they treated our customers better, right? So it's very important for us, and we emphasize this in the book quite strongly, it's not respect or results, it's respect and results. And you can't have one without the other in a good come source culture.
Yeah. We are all about landing in the and here at Let's Grow Leaders, right? And for us, we use relationships and results as that and, but I love respect. And because respect, what came up for me, Mark, as you were talking, is it doesn't discriminate. If I'm going to have a culture of respect within my team, within my company, that's naturally going to flow to customers and suppliers and all the people we're working. It can't not go there. Yeah, it has to.
We're talking so much about a labor shortage right now. Well, we don't have a labor shortage. We have a respect shortage, because the companies that are treating their employees with respect have a line out the door of candidates, because all the candidates that have decided not to return to those company cultures that suck, They're looking for new work. They're looking for new leaders. They're looking for new inspiration. Yeah. Right? They don't have a labor shortage. But if you're treating your people disrespectful in a company culture that doesn't work for them, why would they go back? They've been working at home. They've been with the kids and the dogs and the elderly parents and extended family. They've been balanced. They've been present. And now we're asking them to go back into this sucky.
In some cases, they haven't been. They've still been on site. but also still joining all of us in facing mortality, looking, having this staring contest with death. And yeah, that recognition, what am I doing? Yeah, and yeah. If there's a lack of respect there, it's a hard question to answer in any other way, isn't it?
It really is. And one of the ways we hope we get leaders to start to think about this a little bit differently is that if you are assuming that the way you interact with others is genuinely validating, genuinely respectful, you may have some data you need to gather. And so the concept of how do you balance respect and results? Well, we do this in keynotes all the time. I want you to quickly share with a person next to you, what are the top five metrics, dashboards you look at to manage performance on a day-to-day basis? And the noise level goes skyrocketing. And they have 50. They don't just have five. Mm-hmm. So then we'll talk about, okay, so if demonstrating respect in day-to-day interactions is important too, how are you measuring that? Dead silence. Because that is not a normal expectation in our workplaces. And the other piece with office workers going back or hospitality workers having been through some of these very frustrating 18 months, and they continue to be, younger generations don't appreciate an old school command and control, autocratic, my way or the highway kind of interaction with leaders. And here we've got Gen X who've moved into the roles and they are leaders. And now we've got Gen Ys and Gen Zs who by 2030 are supposed to be 65% of the population of the workplace. They're not going to put up with that. And so there's an even greater opportunity for those leaders that figure this out, that even if we boost civility by 50%, we're going to be way better than anybody else on this street.
You're talking about a massive competitive advantage in your industry.
Absolutely.
Regardless of industry. Absolutely. Yes. You know, one of the positives that I am thinking about as I'm listening to you talk and mark that passion of, gosh, who am I sending? What employers am I sending these young people out into? Is that I completely agree with you, Chris. For the longest time, zero. You have that room full of metrics, and it has been 0 out of 50 involved respect in relationships. And in the last, and it's only been in the last 6 months, as we've been talking to different clients and onboarding different, I'm starting to see it. I'm starting to see there's one. Yeah, you know what I do? I have it on my, every year I'm also evaluated on the relationship component of the, or how well my team is respecting one another.
Yeah.
We're starting to see, it's just the little sprouting seeds. So like the work you're doing is so important to spread this message and get out there and get it going. So I appreciate the work that you're doing in tilling that soil and planting those seeds. So let's get into it. Let's get practical. One of the things that you start us off with as we take this journey as leaders is that we first have to understand what you call our servant purpose. And this is not in one sense a new concept, but I really enjoyed the way that you guys articulated this for us as leaders and the way that it transcends any individual to the organization. So what are we talking about with servant purpose? And then we'll take it from there.
Servant purpose to us is our extended version of why. And the why conversation is not certainly new. It's been around forever. 10, 11 years ago, Simon Sinek popularized it, right? But leaders still aren't embracing the why. We're prioritizing the third quarter report over why, right? We're focused on results, not purpose. And we found in our research for the book and in our practices that the organizations, not necessarily just companies, nonprofits, faith-based organizations, those who had a higher purpose, a servant purpose, showed their people more respect. And because they showed them more respect, results were multiplied. And so for the book, we had to figure out, and for our practice, we had to figure out, well, what is this? What's the underlying factor? If it's not just why, then what is it? And the reality is, and David, you already know this, people need a reason to get out of bed in the morning, especially now, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, we've been facing death in the face for 18 months, right? The world has changed. The pandemic, for all of its faults, helped us reprioritize. We want to live and work with purpose now. We don't want to just collect a paycheck. We don't just want to pay our bills. And a really well-crafted servant purpose not only talks about, other than making money, how the business improves the lives of their customers, how it improves their community, how it improves the lives of their employees, but it sets the tone so people can now align to that purpose, that I get out of bed in the morning because I believe in what we're doing.
This is
a good cause. This is a solid mission. And I'm not just going to collect a paycheck so I can pay the mortgage or the rent. I'm actually accomplishing something here. And so it is bigger than why. A CEO can state the why. In a job interview, you're probably going to ask, you know, do you understand our mission, right? It's one of the first questions you're going to get. Anybody can fake an answer to that in 35 seconds. But is that going to get you out of bed in the morning? Is that going to, when you get tired after a long week, or you've been treated less than respectfully, which still happens even in a good comes first culture, we just have to come back and fix it. Are you still attached to that servant purpose? And that's one of our, what's one of our cornerstones in the book, because without that, we're all just working. We're trading man hours for dollars. And that's all we're doing.
Well, and David, if I can add one of the important steps that I got in trying to, let's say, inspire executive teams to say, your mission statement sucks. Let's try and get something that's a little bit more focused on what you're doing for others. And they give me the, right? Is that noise something that's important from the doggy, right? So I had to figure out how do I make a template statement that will help leaders think about this differently? And what I got to was, to what end? So here's your purpose statement, your mission statement, your vision statement, which sometimes can all look very similar, but we want to be an employer of choice. Classic. To what end? Well, we want to have families feel safe. Oh, now we're getting somewhere. And it's almost as if it literally is a locked door is now open just a bit. And all of a sudden you get that greater volume. I might have 12 people, right? We've had 30 people in a room, Mark, of executive team and next level leaders. And they all of a sudden kind of start to get into this. But then I say, you have to have one statement that says what you do, for whom, and to what end. And they can spend an hour on this in a 2-day face-to-face, or obviously with virtual, we spread it out. But one of the coolest ones that I remember early on, this was a printing company. They printed catalogs in central Minnesota. And that business has been acquired a couple of times because the business is really good. But we asked, God, this is in the old days, with a separate cool little camera with a VHS tape in it, walking around, right, with electrical cables everywhere, to interview 10 people of 600. They said, what's the purpose for our catalog group? And they got one answer: make money. Some were print catalogs, so we make money. But it was this fabulous snapshot of that's what they think is the root purpose of the business. And I said, to what end? Yeah, I know you need to make money. That's good. It's not inspiring, by the way. How are you going to help these people connect to? And what they came up with, and it took 2 days because we kept coming back to it. They weren't done with it. To what end? To what end? And they said, we need to do catalogs so our customers' businesses thrive.
Boom.
It took 2 days, but it was like, oh. Yep. So you think about a third shift gal running a, at the time, very expensive, high-end printer, millions and millions of dollars of this printer, and sees a John Deere cover catalog come through with the wrong green. Now, if her job is to make sure X amount of impressions happen an hour, she doesn't care about the color. But if she knows that color is about their brand, she stops that machine. which, by the way, brings all kinds of attention. But it's, we can't send these out. We can't. It completely changed the way people looked at their business, and it was really cool.
So if, as you are listening, and we're not done yet, we've got a lot more to go, but if you get nothing else out of this conversation, to do the work for your organization or for your team, to dive in, and not just the why, but the servant purpose, and encapsulated in what is it we do that positively changes the life of our customer. That's some of the most important work you can do as a leader. And your customer might be an internal customer. You know, you might be in finance and you're serving your internal customer so that they can serve the external customer, but there's still that same level of servant purpose. And that becomes what you guys call one of your cultural cornerstones, is to live out that purpose, that every team member lives out that purpose, and you as a leader are living out that purpose. Then you take us to a couple other cornerstones, one of which is lean on trust, validation, and growth. And there are some other great cornerstones here, including measuring impact of behaviors on culture and using our voice for good. But I just wanted to camp out here on lean on trust, validation, and growth for a moment. Yeah. Chris, why don't you start us off on that one?
The growth piece, it's so interesting as I think through my evolution as a consultant, and Mark's guidance of me to continue that evolution as a consultant. But we have to validate that we know results are vitally important. I was a nonprofit executive for 15 years, and you can say nonprofit, but we had to make money every month, or we couldn't hire all the people we wanted to hire every month. So there's that burden. So we don't want to discount, demean, dismiss at all the requirement for results. But what we have to do is, if there's respect, validation happening in those day-to-day interactions, people are going to start to use their brains to solve problems you didn't even know were coming down the pike, or maybe were costing you time and energy and money today. And so that cornerstone, I think the foundational output we hope for, is that people begin to proactively solve problems for you. They have not only the kind of significance, meaning of the work, but it's that now we've been wasting money at this stupid machine for 10 months. Let's just fix the machine, right? And you don't have to be a formal leader in order to solve problems. You want everybody to be engaged in that and to be committed to that. But people will not act in your favor if they don't feel trusted and respected, if they're not being given credit, if they're not being greeted pleasantly, even if you don't remember their name, right? So that the core of that relationship growth is what leads to company growth, with new markets, with new opportunities, with new ways to save money. It's you want every brain cell and every heart connected to that servant purpose, and that's what's going to drive the growth.
Hence back to every employee experiencing that level of validation, that level of being valued, trusted, then the growth that comes as a result of that. Mark, when you think about trust, validation, and growth, what comes up for you?
Well, two things. Validation we've covered quite well. Trust, to me, especially in the cultures that we've helped and researched, trust is a CEO, a leader, the chief role model for your defined company culture, doing what she says she's going to do, taking the hard road, certainly the high road sometimes when things aren't going well. We're not going to sacrifice our values to make that third quarter report look better, because one of our values is integrity. So if we just all stop what we're doing, start yelling at each other, do whatever it takes to make that third quarter report look better, We aren't just treating each other disrespectfully, we're eroding trust. And so it's a bigger picture thing, especially for leaders. And we use the term chief role model officer often to say, if you're not that person, if you say one thing But then you're the CEO that gets caught on tape kicking the puppy in the elevator.
Oh no.
then we have a trust issue here, right? And yeah. And that's where the old school thing comes into play, the legacy leader. We refer to it in the book as boomer male syndrome, that do as I say, not as I do thing. Well, that's the easiest way to erode trust. And on the growth side, I'll make this really quick. It isn't just about the growth of the company. It's about the personal and professional growth of the team members, of the people actually contributing to the results the company is generating. And the best leaders, the best role models, the best culture architects, they know that that growth of the company has to be aligned with the personal and professional growth of the employee, of and fellow leaders, by the way, right? There has to be an end game. It can't just be alignment of purpose. It can't just be what got me out of bed in the morning. It's I'm actually thriving here. I'm doing good work here. I'm learning here. I'm being given more responsibility here. So I'm going to stick around. I wouldn't think about going anywhere else right now, which improves production, profits, retention, employee referrals, and all those other metrics that when we sit in a keynote and say, how do you measure results? And we have all these answers and we can point to them on two hands easily. Well, just by focusing a little bit on the personal and professional growth of your team members, then all of those other numbers go way up.
Absolutely. All right, so we are talking with Chris Edmonds and Mark Babbitt here, the co-authors of Good Comes First, and we're talking about building uncompromising corporate culture where respect and results are valued equally. And we are three white guys, all of whom have gray hair. I'm just
there's some birthdays under the belt.
There's, let's be real, for everybody who's listening. Me. Right. You may not be able to see us, but three white dudes, all with gray hair. OK, so we're all in a certain demographic.
Yeah.
And that even the notion of what respect means for people like us and for businesses around the world, but particularly in the U.S., has had to evolve, grow and change to become a more full and well-rounded and inclusive definition. And I'm curious how you see those conversations going and what in particular is some of the work that all the folks who might have BMS, Mark, as you said it, yeah, that was boomer male syndrome, right?
That's right.
If you missed that. What's going on there? And what are you seeing? And what are some of the things that we need to be focused on as we're engaged in that growth?
Well, David, first I'll say that we understandably are already getting some pushback as two old white guys that wrote the author of this book. You know, there's a guy code almost that says, wait a minute, you're tearing down what we're trying to protect. I mean, as an old white guy CEO, I've worked really hard over the last 20 years to hire people who look and think and talk like I do. And yes, I talk a good game about diversity and equity and DEI efforts, but when it comes down to it, I'm gonna protect what I have, and I want to remain in power. And the problem with that, David, and you already know this, is that when we only focus on the people who look and think and talk like we do, we lose the voices that matter. And we've seen now firsthand, again, not just in our work, but in the research for the book, the companies that are truly diverse, that welcome thought from everybody, where everybody's voice matters, it's so much easier to show the respect that we need them to do to have that great culture. But when we discount and demean somebody because of their gender, the color of their skin, you know, any other number, their preferences, their religions, then by definition, we are disrespecting them. And that makes it really hard to have a purposeful company culture.
So Mark, I'm curious, and Chris, you can chime in here too. What do you tell that CEO? What's the conversation that you have with them? Because I think if people are being real, you may not be the CEO who's grown this whole thing and you're trying to hire and protect what you built and all that. You might be a mid-level manager who's struggling with changes and where do I fit in? You know, and even Mark, you said the voices that matter. Well, where's my voice in that conversation? And if I pass the microphone, do I no longer ever get the microphone? You know, what are some of the conversations that you're having?
Well, I'll explain
ahead,
that,
Chris,
that
yes.
one of the biggest levers we have is we have a charge to help leaders look at different ways of managing and looking at their leadership behaviors and seeing if they're getting what they need out of it. Dr. Phil thing, you know, how's this working for you? But we also want to make this simple. And as we are invited into organizations, we tell senior leaders that we're going to challenge you. We are going to discover things in our initial interviews and our report back on summary insights from next level leaders, frontline team members, everybody in between, what's working and what's not. It's not going to be pretty, but it's all fixable and it's a point in time. So we're not going to blame anybody for the creation of that, but sometimes that all the Klieg lights on in the dirty kitchen is what's needed to say, wow, we need to actually stop and invest time and energy to fix this. But the biggest issue that I think leaders have is they don't want to look bad. They don't want to look like they don't understand. They don't want to look like they're fearful, and yet we all are. And every time I was doing leadership stuff, I was scared because I wasn't certain of what I was doing and where I was going. So what we try and do is to make, I tell leaders all the time, this is going to be a soft landing for you, but I'm still going to be holding you accountable. If we get gaps identified that are going to erode respect out of the gate, we can't move beyond that. So the simplicity of culture change, and boy, isn't that an interesting way of looking at this, because it is complex, but what we really want leaders to do is to be able to ensure that performance expectations are formalized and people are held accountable. By the way, that could be 5 years worth of work right there, right? Because often we are asked to help us make sure that our people are delivering what they promised they would. Well, that's a leadership thing. We can work with you. But can we make it as simple to say, let's define respect with clear expectations and behaviors and hold everybody accountable for that? Mm-hmm. So it seems almost a little bit, well, shoot, I think I can maybe do that. And of course, we get into detail. Mark had a great example of an integrity behavior that a lot of our clients, I'm not sure if enjoy is the right word, but they latch onto because it's behavioral, it's observable, it's measurable. I do what I say I will do. Well, okay, we can measure that. We can get feedback from your direct reports, and they may not all be in the corner of he does everything, she does it, right? So the simplicity of let's get standards more thoroughly defined for both respect and results, and then let's look at inclusion, and let's look at voices, and let's look at how people influence policies and practices and who you let and solve problems. And it may be the folks that act and sound like you as a leader, and that may not be the best thing for your organization.
And Mark, what would you add?
I would say go to the data. There isn't a company on the planet that can't go to their HR team right now and say, print me out a report based on gender, title, and income, and let me see if I'm paying men on the same exact scale as women. And many companies, because it's a legacy systemic issue, they're going to find out they're not. So fix it. Like right now, like in the next pay cycle, make it equitable, right? So it isn't just the right thing to do. And it isn't just some kumbaya foo-foo token, we're going to fix this little problem, then hope nobody mentions that the last 12 VPs were all old white guys, right? This is just the beginning. But if we can take a good hard look at that data, which implies we have to be vulnerable enough to actually look and act on what the data tells us, then we're already making change. We're already making the culture better, because now 50% of the people in that enter the doors every day know they're being treated more equitably. Gender pay gap's just one example. There are many others where we can, you know, promotions, hiring, retention, performance plans. One of our clients, 25, the Hispanic population within their company was only 11% of the entire company, but 40% of the people on performance plans were Hispanic. Well, there's data, and we can act on that right now. What systemically, what's happening in this company that is leading us in that direction, right? And so it is a tough conversation, but the data is there. You just have to be willing to look at it. And most important, you have to be willing to act upon what you see.
And if we go back to Shakespeare, the willingness is all, right? The willingness is all. That vulnerability, the humility to be willing to look the truth in the face and be uncomfortable with it. It's okay to have that discomfort and recognize you're not perfect and no other leader out there is. So if that's the standard you're holding yourself to, it's ridiculous. But the willingness to look at it, to face whatever truth it is you need to face and learn and grow from it is only going to help. It's only going to improve things for you and for your team and your business. All right, so the last topic I want to dive in on here, because it is a core element of the work and the process that I'm going to encourage everyone listening, go get Good Comes First. It's out now. As we're playing this, it is out. You're going to be able to get this. You're going to want to get it because as you walk through the how, a key part of this is what Chris and Mark call the organizational constitution. And so I'd like to ask you, and Chris, I'll turn this one over to you to start with here, to take us through what is an organizational constitution? Why do we need one? What does it do for you?
Good. Well, I'll go back to this kind of core concept of how do we educate leaders? How do we help leaders get clear on what their desired culture ought to look like? And it's not just results focused. So the first element is the servant purpose. So it's getting that foundation built of who do we serve, to what end, and what's a more meaningful way of looking at the work that we do and the contributions we make. The second element is values and behaviors. We've already talked about both of those to a bit. And often that's where the most wordsmithing comes into play and creativity comes into play, because people will go back to relying, okay, so let's do a value of excellence and let's do, we need to exceed our net budgeted outcomes by 10%. You already have a full system for managing results. Let's talk about relationships. Let's talk about respect. How are we going to measure that? Now that's harder. But once you get the values and behaviors plugged in, it leads to the alignment process and the measure process and the coaching opportunities. The last two pieces of an organizational constitution are strategies and goals, which take in that whole performance approach, results expectations, broader parent company plan, what have you. And to be honest, most organizations have some form of a strategic plan. They have much better tactical numbers that might be, you know, kind of in the red right at this point in time. So they're a little hot about, oh, we're missing this mark and we're late on these deliveries. But it's the values and behaviors that are what change the way the culture is viewed and changes the way people feel. I know it's a feeling word, because they actually are being validated and recognized and appreciated for their contributions and their ideas. So those four pieces, servant purpose is a bit more of a broader vision. This is what we're trying to live every day. Strategies and goals are the performance, the results expected. The fun stuff is the values and behaviors, because by getting the behavioral definitions, we shift this from kumbaya, right? 30,000 foot view, to these are the three behaviors we're going to measure from our integrity value. These are the three behaviors. I've got clients that want a fun value. Okay, come on, bring it on. How are we going to measure that? Right? And they do. So there's a wonderful, let's call it an inviting conversation about if you go this direction, if you formalize these elements of your organizational constitution, we have to measure them. We have to gather the data And there's some interesting things that come from that. You're going to get your great leaders that you already know. They're going to get validated. You know, she's a benchmark star. She's always very nice and very pleasant, even when she brings bad news, whatever, right? Those folks are going to get validated. Some folks are going to be kind of, you're not paying me enough to be nice to these people. I may not stay here. That's okay. That's okay. Because if they're not going to align, it's not going to work for anybody. But that's the key, is to have that organizational constitution be seen as a daily operating system. And everybody, the Brits, my British friends tell me we stole the Magna Carta and called it the Constitution. Yes, that's true. But it means we can go back centuries to say something formalized that everyone agrees to can make tremendous impact.
So yeah, that is such a powerful concept, the Constitution, to formalize some of those pieces that we consider intangible. How are we measuring them, and take it from there? Which, if I am the CEO or the chief operating officer, the president of an organization, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. And I hope all of the folks with those titles are listening and going, absolutely, let's get this going. Mark, what if I'm a department head, a leader of a team of five? Is this a concept, the organizational constitution, that I can use with my team, and even if it's not the whole organization or my CEO isn't there?
Absolutely. And we've facilitated those practices. And we want to enable even informal leaders to step up and help create a culture. But sometimes we have to start with a subculture first, a team, perhaps a small team or a department, or a night shift versus the day shift. And those very practical applications of the organizational constitution, which I'll add to everything Chris said to me. And by the way, organizational constitution, Chris wrote about it in 2014 in a book called The Culture Engine.
And fantastic book, by the way.
That's what drew me to Chris, because it was something missing in my practice. And yes, it provides values and data's behaviors definitions. And yes, it leads to the data that we all want to rely on when making decisions. But to me, it was always something bigger. It was a North Star. It was a compass. And it was an accountability tool. Am I personally living, modeling, coaching these behaviors that I helped define, that I said I would live up to when I took the job? And so for me, it's much bigger than that. Well, because it is that, it can be applied to smaller teams, to departments, to divisions, to the shifts where you make a 10% extra because you're up all night, right? These are important aspects. And we labeled these in the book, David, contagious pockets of excellence. And here's what happens when that shift, when that team starts living by their own subculture, a boss across the room, or when it gets time to do the reports to the big boss, and that person's always the shining star of the meeting, somebody's going to look across the table and what the hell are you doing? When did this start?
What are you feeding those people?
Right. And it becomes a contagious pocket of excellence, becomes more contagious. And we've worked with teams of as small as six to build this. And yes, they almost always take it to their VP, who takes it to the EVP, who takes it to the CTO and the CFO and the COO. And eventually, guess where it goes, right? And then the CEO goes, well, I can't argue with the numbers. What are they doing? What are they doing differently? What are they doing that the other teams are not doing? And now we have a much bigger, more fruitful conversation around, well, if it works for them, it works for them so well, why aren't we doing that?
I love it so much. And if you are, I know you're listening, so you can't see how much my face hurts from the smile that I have. I just love that commitment to contagious pockets of excellence. We around here, we call it like a cultural oasis, right?
Yeah.
But creating that as a leader, you're listening going, gosh, yes, I'm committed to this. Yes, I want to, good comes first. I want to define that servant purpose. I want to create that organizational constitution and define those things and have a measure. And we create that agreement together. Do it. just love the passion that Mark was saying earlier. You've got it. Go do it. You don't have to wait for permission.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you, we've had numerous examples over the years with these pockets of excellence that really got noticed. One of them was in a large retailer, unable to tell you exactly whom, but
there's lots of blue and yellow everywhere.
Stop it. So there's this wonderful three-state region with a leader who cared and a leader who wanted to make a difference. And that's always going to be the driver. Is a leader who then inspires a leadership team. And then it becomes, again, it's a good virus. It's an idea virus. That's a positive thing in a culture. They took this on and had 40% gains in employee engagement in 18 months. Customer service, which was very closely monitored, was 38% early on, got up to about 45, and results were up 30%. Now that got the attention of the parent company. Literally, what are you doing over there? What are you feeding them over there? This gentleman's span of control grew to a district of seven states, and they continued to have that kind of benefit. I remember us going to a conference center and having 400 leaders in six rooms. And it's like, okay, this is going to be a bit fun. But it was really, really cool because they had already seen it. They'd already experienced it. And what can be interesting is that leader is often seen as a great resource, and they might get plucked out of there and move to another division, department, even another company, et cetera. And they take that with them because they get it. They're infected with that cool virus now, right? And unfortunately, in this case, a leader came in who was immersed in the rather classic command and control, and those gains all dropped within a year.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the challenge is that if you come in as a leader, take a look around and see what's working, and don't throw out the stuff that's working, throw out the stuff that isn't.
Yeah. And if you do come into a culture that has an organizational constitution, by goodness, you have got to steep yourself in that, truly understand it before you go a different direction.
So we talked a lot about personal and professional growth. The person that Chris is talking about is now the CEO of his own major retailer organization because that retailer saw what he was doing and how he approached things differently. And now he's just a superstar within that company. Chris, I wish we could talk about the companies more, but he took everything he learned and now he's running, you know, a retail operation of hundreds of stores. And even during the recession, they grew exponentially, at least here in Colorado Springs and the Denver area, Denver Tech Center, all these stores are closing and his organization is opening new stores.
That's
in the middle of the pandemic. Right?
That is a contagious culture right there.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's great. It's great to see. And it's also just one more story of the leaders taking this with them. One of our endorsers who works for an organization in Atlanta took over a division and they boosted, Mark, see if I can remember this. They boosted their net profits in the middle of a pandemic by 30%?
Yes, 30%.
And boy, did the rest
pandemic.
Yeah. And she just said, I'm going back to the organizational constitution. We need to get clear and then we need to hold people accountable. And we're going to attract people that are going to love this environment and they're going to thrive in this environment. So God love her. She said, okay, we need to take it to the rest of the organization. That's going to be a bigger conversation. You're already proving that it fits in the company. We'll just kind of follow you around and try and inspire folks and guide folks. It's wonderfully gratifying to see that happen.
The power of a leader who cares. You know, as earlier today I was doing some discovery work, some interviews with a client that I'm onboarding, and a frontline employee said, you know what's awesome here? This isn't a business. They care about us. They care about their people. And it was one of those, knowing I was going to be talking with you later today, I was like, oh my goodness, that that at some level in the mass, you know, zeitgeist, whatever, that understanding that business means we don't care.
Yeah.
And how much work is ahead of every leader who does care and is who's committed to good comes first.
Yeah.
And so as we're closing our time today, and we could keep going, and there's so many more directions we could take, but in the time that we have, as we're wrapping up, where do people start? Where, as a leader, what's the first step? And we get two first steps because we've got two of you today. So who would like to go first?
I'll go first because it's so important. And I preach this personally all the time, and now Chris does too. Before taking this big leap, you have to take a few seconds as a leader. And I don't care what your background is. I don't care what your education level is. I don't care what your experience level is. And you have to ask yourself, is my organization ready to put good first? And if you look around you, let's say there's seven members of your leadership team that are the old school command and control, screaming and yelling to get they want. They have new administrative assistants every 7 months because they can't retain anybody. You got to look at that first and go, stop, time out. I want to do this. And I can certainly do it within my sphere of influence. I can create my own pocket of excellence, or I can handpick a team to apply this to. But if you look around and your leadership team isn't ready for this, don't start it. Because if you do, you're going to fail. This is why 90% of change initiatives failed. David, you know this, because we don't have the right people in place, right? And so don't just go by the book and just jump into this. Actually take a weekend or something and just go, who would be on board? And if they're not on board now, what would it take to get them on board? And if I can't get them on board, well, I already had a feeling they weren't great for the business anyway. So maybe attrition needs to be my best friend right now.
That's right? Data.
And that's data, right? And especially if you're doing value surveys and you're doing leadership effectiveness surveys and you're doing all the things we recommend, you already have the data to say, no, people don't respect him. People don't believe he's telling them the truth. I don't feel as I have an equal opportunity to be promoted under his guidance, under his leadership, right? Well, there's the data. And so don't just go jumping into this. Don't do what Chris calls management by announcement. From this moment forward, we're going to be a good comes first company. No, wrong approach, bad approach.
Just buy t-shirts.
Don't do that. you gotta make sure you got the right team.
Yeah, you really do. And to that, David, I will add, one of the ways I've coached particularly small business owners, team leaders, department leaders, to say, you don't have to wait for some other organizational beast to say, we're going forward with this. Start with values, but don't call them values because that's kind of fluffy. Let's call them ground rules. Our meetings are not effective. We don't respect each other when we're trying to get to a decision. Here's the five ground rules that I suggest. What others do you have? And don't come up with 20. Keep it at five or six or seven. But start with helping that group, be it your department or your leadership team, with holding them accountable for being respectful in their actual day-to-day operations. That can be a huge, let's call it, releasing of the emergency brakes, right? And yet, if you can also learn from that and observe from that, sometimes people, again, the teams aren't ready. They are given the opportunity. They can't be respectful. They don't get it. This is the only way I know how to lead. It's to throw crap and yell. I remember doing a frontline players interview in one of our blue collar environments. And this guy I got on the phone said, can I call you back in 10 minutes? I just had a guy throw a ladder at one of his peers. Mm. Yeah, let's take a break. That would be good. Let's take a little break. And again, we have a tendency to tolerate bad treatment under the guise of it's all about the results. And even with ground rules, it's a soft start and it could work.
All right. Chris Edmonds, Mark Babbitt, the authors of Good Comes First, How Today's Leaders Create an Uncompromising Company Culture That Doesn't Suck. Guys, where do we find you? Where do we connect with you? And where do we find the book?
Find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Hudson News, Hudson Booksellers in the airports.
That's right.
It'll be on the bookshelves there, which is always kind of cool for an author to walk by the gate and see your book in the window. That's cool. And go to goodcomesfirst.com because we aren't there just to sell the book. That's not what that site's about. It's to tell you a little bit more about us, a little bit more about the why now. You can actually invest in the idea of Good Comes First before you even buy the book. So definitely go to goodcomesfirst.com.
All right, goodcomesfirst.com. You can get the book, sounds like, anywhere, including your local airport, which I will be in next week. So I'm looking forward to seeing it in as I walk by that Hudson. So, wow, what a conversation this has been as I am processing everything and had read the book myself and looking at all of the takeaways, I just know how valuable this is going to be. So please do yourself, your team, your organization a favor. Get a copy of Good Comes First, but don't just read it. Do it. And start where Mark and Chris encourage you to examine your team before you do anything. Don't make any announcements, but maybe take the brakes off by saying, what would it look like for us to operate with mutual respect as we do X, as we run a meeting, as we make a decision, as pick it something narrow enough that people can talk about it and start to create those ground rules. And as Chris said, we're not going to call them values quite yet. That's got too much corporate speak around it. Let's start with ground rules and build that together. Chris, Mark, thank you so much for being on the show today. So appreciate you helping out all of our leaders out there with these practical suggestions for human-centered leadership.
David, thank you for the opportunity. I so appreciate being able to connect with you, even if it's not quite as local as it used to be a few years back.
Yeah, we'll get there again, right, Mark?
That's right. That's right. So, and we, again, thank you for the opportunity, David. Always great to talk to you.
Oh, likewise. All right. Good comes first. Get out there, create those ground rules, get that organizational constitution going, and you're on your way to being the leader you'd want your boss to be.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.